Hello everyone and welcome back to the Cyclocross Social Podcast. Today we're going to be recapping some of the news regarding the Cyclocross riders of the past week. And with me here to do that is Issam. Issam, now I'm going to say thank you for being here, but people ask me, do you actually say thank you for having me every time, or do I just paste the same audio clip every time?
Apparently it's a habit of mine, but I think most of the time I say it, but yeah, it's something that pops up and then I just say it, I guess. So I didn't notice it at first, but then you told me and I listened it back a couple of times and I realized that it is indeed the case. So yeah, it's just something I open with and it's probably a favorite opening for me, I guess.
Yeah, my response is always the same as well. So thank you for being here, Issam, making some time. We're a bit later than directly after Strade Bianche because actually for once I needed to make a podcast for school, which was interesting. It was about geography, but enough about that stuff. Let's dive into the racing because the Strade Bianche took place. The race there had a slightly new course. There were a couple of gravel sections added towards the end of the race. The men's race got a bit longer. The women's race stayed the same but had more gravel. A couple of cyclocross riders were racing there. Let's start by discussing Puk Pieterse, Issam. Before the race, there was quite some hype around her. Top 5, maybe top 3. She impressed in Omloop. She made a good impression for the first part of the race, but then fell slightly short in the final part of the race. I think it's not what she'd hoped for, but also nothing to be worried about, and also definitely not a shame considering it's not her priority.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there is definitely no shame in her performance. We kind of hoped for more, and I think that could have been possible, but that was basically the max for her at that point. And, you know, I feel that, as you said, it's not the main focus for her. It's the Olympics that will count, the Olympics that are the most important, where she needs to be in peak physique and in top condition. And I think that that is her priority, and it's then going to be very difficult to be in top form here in Strade. But I feel that for, you know, the form that she had, and she really tried, it was just not enough to really follow the attacks that mattered in the end, especially on the Dolphin. And then it becomes a very difficult race to hang on. But I think, you know, for her it was again a very good outing. You know, if you finish 13th, you're still within the best, the very best of the women road cycling, and I think that that is definitely an achievement upon itself. Of course, we knew that from last year that it is possible, but yeah, in the end, there is not much you can do. Sometimes it goes in your favor, and sometimes it doesn't. And this was really a race that, in the end, just didn't have enough.
The fact that she faded so much towards the end of the race, and then I mean after the final climb of Le Tolfe, it might be a bit of a lack of endurance base, and probably just the fitness isn't really there. And it makes sense, because Pieterse is not her big goal. She said she did this for fun, and yes, she trained for it, but she didn't necessarily peak for it. I think that's good. She said the road season she's doing is going to be pretty limited. It's a bit longer than last year, but it's going to be in focus of the mountain bike season. She wants to put some speed in the legs, do a bit of base building in those races as well, create a bit of toughness towards the mountain bike season. And I think that's smart. If we look, for instance, at the Swiss mountain bike team, they are racing in Italy now as well. They're racing the stage race Trofeo Ponente in Rossa. And they did super well in the prologue. Alessandra Keller won ahead of Linda Ingegaard. We saw Yolanda Neff in ninth. Stina Frey was in there as well. And they're racing to get some speed in the legs. And there's a lot of mountain bike riders that do that. For cross riders, it's also important to do cross, to do road in preparation for their cross. But that's more towards the summer that they do that. We see they always race the Tour of Namur, a couple of other races. But as a Belgium Tour always has the bigger teams at the start. So yeah, what that makes sense that Pieterse isn't in the best form. It makes sense she's doing the road races. She's also skipping the first two rounds of the Mountain Bike World Cup. Those are taking place in Brazil, Issam. What do you think about that decision?
I think that it is in the end a sensible and eventually help her prepare more optimal towards the Olympics, because I feel that it will take a lot, the travel, the stay there. And I'm not going to say that it is very different compared to other countries, but there are obviously certain things that you have to take into account. And you know, it's only a World Cup in the end of it, and you have to sacrifice quite a lot for it. So there are certain risks there. Also, in terms of health, we have heard last year that certain riders got sick in the race week up to the race, who were there and were not able to compete in the end. So I think with all the risks there and the travel and everything that is surrounded by that race, yeah, and with the Olympics coming up, which is so important, you don't want to jeopardize your preparation. You don't know what can happen there, so you're better off taking no risks. And I think that is what they are trying to do with that decision, and I can totally understand that.
You know, I love the Brazilian Mountain Bike World Cups. 2 years ago, when we were in Petropolis, it was electric there. That was not normal. There were so many people, and it's a shame that Petersen decides to skip it, and she won't be the only one. But you made some very good points, Esam, and I think it's the sensible decision, especially considering the fact that she did want to race Strade Bianche. There's only a month between Strade Bianche and the first World Cup taking place in Mariupol. It's just a big ask to go there. So whilst it's an unfortunate decision, I also think it's a wise decision. At the same time, I just want to say that the Mountain Bike World Cup calendar just makes no sense whatsoever. Like, and this is the case every single year in the past few years, but the first World Cups are so early in April that most people don't show up in form. It doesn't really create hype for your series if you put month gaps between most of the races. There's a month of no racing before the Olympics, and then between the Olympics and the World Championships, there's another month of no racing. Like, it doesn't make all too much sense for me, or it's not necessarily a complete month, but it's 3 weeks from the top of my head. But it doesn't really make much sense. It doesn't generate much hype. The Mountain Bike World Cup is being expanded for the second year in a row. It's now finishing in October. In the UCI vision statement for 2030, they say they want to encourage mountain bike riders to also take on cyclocross. If that's what you're doing, explain to me why you're expanding the Mountain Bike World Cup so far into the season that mountain bike riders need to rest longer, making it even less likely that they are going to hop on that mountain bike. I would much rather see the Mountain Bike World Cup take place from October and finish in the first weekend of September, like it always used to, finish with the World Championships most of the time, or only one World Cup after that, would just be a lot better for the entire sport. Then on to a teammate of Petersen, Jara Kastelein. She's done a very limited cross campaign, but deep inside of her, I'm 100% sure she still is a cyclocross rider. She loves the sport. She's just focusing on the road, which makes sense. It's not even a guarantee anymore she would make the Dutch national team, so completely get that decision. She did super well. She finished just outside of the top 10, Esam. Were you surprised by that ride?
I have to say I was, to be honest. I think that it is definitely something that she can do, but if you would have asked me before the race, I don't think that I would have matched that result with how she was before the race. And yeah, I think that for her it was a very good race and a very good ride. And I'm not sure if that was said, but I'm quite sure that I remember something along the line of Petersen saying that it was a missed opportunity for her to not relay for Kastelein in the final. And yeah, I don't know. I think that definitely, I don't know in what way that could have helped Kastelein, but for sure it looked that she was, in the end, you can also see it in the results. She even had to relay a little bit for Petersen also, but was still able to get through the race in the end a little bit better than Petersen. So you can then definitely say that she had a very solid day. And yeah, I think that performance is definitely something where you can build up on for the rest of the season. And you know, for Kastelein, it's, I would say, quite clear that she made the decision to focus fully on the road in a way and have cyclocross in terms of preparation and use it a little bit, but you know, the road is where she focused on. And I feel that is then a very encouraging result, and overall it looks like it was a very good decision for her to focus on the road.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it already paid dividends with that stage win in the Tour de France Femme last year from the breakaway. That was an impressive ride by her, so it just made sense because the technique wasn't there for her. Her relative performance was slipping down. It was harder and harder to even make World Cup and World Championship selections, let alone get a good result there. So it made sense. And you were right. Petersen said that at the end of the day, she thinks they should have worked for Kastelein. Personally, I'm not that surprised by her result when there's a lot of climbing involved, like here, like in Liège, like in Amstel Gold, like in Tour of Flanders. I do expect Kastelein to be able to get a top 10. I'm more surprised that it happened after the race she did. You already mentioned she worked for Pieterse, but in the middle of the race, she also went in a breakaway. I think for some like 40, 50k she was in that group. So she did super well, and to finish 11th then is no shame. And I think we'll see more from her a bit later in this season as well, because she's proven that she is like a top 15 rider in most of these one-day classics. She beat a couple of cyclocross riders. If we look, for instance, we saw Sylvia Persico, unfortunately didn't do a single race this season, earning 14 behind Puk Pieterse. Also nice to see Evita Muzic up there from FDJ, the French rider there who has finished in the top 10 of the Tour de France Femme before, did a lot of cross racing this winter. Well, a lot, that's an over-exaggeration, but she did do, I think, from the top of my head, I looked it up, like 6 or 7 races, 2 in Switzerland, the rest in France, did Coupe de France races, raced even the European Championships. And yeah, she raced pretty early on in the season, but it was still cool to see her take that on. Then we can't go without talking about the best performing cyclocross rider up here is some, and then I'm not talking about Lotte Kopecky because she did the Koppenbergcross a few years ago, but I'm definitely talking about Sherin van Anrooy, 5th place. Just like last week in Omloop het Nieuwsblad, she came just short on the final climb, managed to come back, but unlike in Omloop, she wasn't remotely in contention for the victory, but was another encouraging ride for her.
Yeah, I think that she was in a similar role, if you compare it to the Omloop, but you know, this is maybe, it was just a little bit too much for her, but and also with the competitors just not really able to get in the mix for a podium or something similar. But overall, I feel that it was again a very great outing from her, and confirming the form that she showed in Omloop, in my opinion. And a very good race also, just, you know, keep on fighting and trying to stay as close as possible to the front. I think that she never really let the pace drop. She was always trying to, if she was dropped, to get back. And if she was able to be of good use for Longoborghini, then she tried to do so. And valuable teammate and a very strong ride also individually. So I think that it is, it was again a very good ride. And I just, it looks very encouraging for the next couple of races. So I think that, as you said in the, with the Omloop episode already, that when we go to also the paved climbs, more the Liège, Bastogne Liège kind of races and Amstel Gold race, then maybe we can enjoy Van Anrooy maybe even more at the front, fighting for a podium, and who knows, even more. So it's great to see, for sure.
Then on to the injury bulletin. Sandra Carmen Alvarado is off the bike for a couple of weeks. Her team writes on Instagram, actually just hours before we recorded this podcast, that she has been struggling with her back, as we know. They found that there is a stress reaction at the level of the sacrum due to overuse, and that she is taking 3 weeks of rest and needs to do aqua training and stabilization exercises. I am happy I don't need to do any aqua training. That seems horrendous, but that's the injury of Alvarado. We've also learned that Betsema has been suffering with an injury to the knee. And Issam, I'm going to need to rant about this, because I just think this is insanely poor athlete management by Paul Sousa. Betsema crashed super, super hard before the season. She was hit by a car. That was before. Then she says, 3 weeks before the season started, I could finally ride my bike again. She couldn't walk for a month. Like, her preparation was ruined, okay? Do you expect her to perform when you know that? No, of course not. But why do they send her into competition, like, a month after she can walk again? Like, it doesn't make any sense. They know then that her knee, as a consequence of that crash, is injured, and they let her race the entire season, and after the season, oh yeah, she's gonna get surgery now. Like, that's not healthy. You don't treat your athlete like that. If you know this is horrible, you need surgery, like, don't make her suffer that entire season at the risk of making it worse. If you know her preparation is ruined and she can barely walk before you put her on the bike and put her into a race, like, sacrifice a month of racing to get her onto a representative form level, because now you've done nothing except ruin the season at risk of making a knee injury worse. potentially, the potential is always there, career ending. Like, I just don't think this is the way how you treat your rider.
I agree, but I don't know exactly who was behind the choice of riding again. I don't. I personally would say that it wasn't Paul Sells, but it was Betsema herself that made that decision. But for sure, I can agree with you that if it indeed was the team that pushed for that idea to continue racing, and overall, I feel that a team has a responsibility to make sure that the rider has the right care and you know, goes along with these injuries the right way. And most of the time for an injury, it means that you have to take some time off. We've seen it with Brandt. We have said it many times during the season that we liked the way how Brandt was treating her injury, and that she took her time, and that she, when she came back in full force. And we have seen that she enjoyed, you know, she missed out on a couple of weeks, but when she came back, it looked very good, and she had, you know, she thoroughly enjoyed the last part of the season. It's not great, but, you know, for starters, an injury is not great to start with. So, you know, then you have to make sure that you get through that and get through it the right way. But I feel that with cyclocross, especially because the season is so, in a way, packed, and there is a lot of interest in almost every single race, and especially for Betsema, who wants to try and be good in almost every classification, it becomes... definitely becomes an issue when you're injured. And if that is Paul Sauza that decides, or the medical staff of Paul Sauza, or Betsema herself, I think that somewhere in that, the way that they are deciding such measurements in terms of how you're going to deal with the injury, somewhere it went really wrong. And if that is with Betsema, the team should have stepped in, and the other way around. And that is kind of what we have been seeing with several riders, I have to say. We have seen good examples, but we also have seen some poorer ones, where you always look at it and be like, if you just waited a little bit longer, if you just, you know, gave it a little more weeks, or sometimes you just see that the rider is in a very bad period and you're like, why you just not take 2 weeks off, don't take 3 weeks off. And it seems that that decision, especially for cyclocross riders, just seems very hard, because, you know, they don't really want to miss out on a race weekend just because, you know, it could mean that you're not going to be well placed in the classification at the end of the season. So there are several factors, but I can for sure agree with you that it is not the most professional way, the way they dealt with the injury of Betsema, and how she went through the season kind of struggling for the entirety of it.
Well, I mean, if Betsema was the one making the decision on, okay, I'm going to keep racing, I still think there's something wrong in the team, because this information should always be known at the team. They've admitted that they've known this is going on for a while. But then as team, you also need to use your authority. You need to be able to tell your rider, hey, look at this. You've crashed. You're only able to barely walk again. You're not able to train properly. You've missed a month of training. You're going to do a different cross season. Like, there needs to be some sort of authority there. Or some sort of authority like, hey, we've tried racing, it's clearly not going well, we're not going to try and put a small plaster on a tremendous wound, we're actually going to try and stitch that wound for you. We're going to take a month off and then try and come back. I mean, if you look at Dan Suter, he had long COVID and he took super long off and only returned for the final three races of the season. He only did Sint-Niklaas, Brussels and Oostmalle. He did all right in those races. And of course, it's better for him, for his morale, that he raced those three races instead of only returned in September next year. But there's, like, at least some form of decision-making going on there. And I feel like that's missing, and that really needs to be done to preserve the health of the riders and just also the mental state of a rider, because it can't be good for Betsema to race at this level. I don't think Betsema will ever reach the level that we are currently seeing from the front runners, but she's also not that bad that she's barely finishing in the top 20 of races. Then we also have some transfer news this time. Anna Kay is leaving the cyclocross Reds, going to Proximus. What do you think about that transfer?
I think that it was coming in a way. It was the last 2 years, at least, it was not the greatest of seasons that we have seen from Kay. And at a certain point, they make a decision there. And if the results are not great and you're at the end of your contract, you can expect sometimes to not be renewed, and then you have to find a new team. And I think with Proximus, it's not the greatest team out there, but it's definitely a team that can support you well, and it's a team that will definitely be more satisfied with the results that she had so far, and maybe she can both build some confidence back and try to get those results up again, because it's needed in a way, yeah, if you want to stay on the professional level in cyclocross. And I feel that it is, that there is still the possibility in her career to do so, but it's going to be tougher and tougher with every season that's passing, and needs to change in a way the results. So hopefully with the new team she can try and you know, make up for the bad seasons and build up again and see where it goes from there.
Kay had some pretty decent showings throughout this season, which I would say is positive. Not only the British Championships looked all right, okay, sure, Beckstedt wasn't there, but she had a couple of good showings. The Koppenberg comes to mind. We saw a couple of other races where it was okay, but it appears difficult for Kay in the past couple of seasons to maintain the form level that she has in the beginning of the season throughout the year. And my theory there will be that she just comes in too hot or doesn't take enough time off to train, a couple of things like that. So yeah, I think that's something for her to work on, and maybe a new team will provide an environment to do that. Then our next news bulletin is going to be on Fem van Empel. She is currently at altitude on the Teide. She did a run, Issam. This is your terrain. I need some insights here. Van Empel went for a run together with Wout van Aert. Van Empel ran 4 kilometers with an average pace of 4:54 per kilometer. Van Aert went for 6 kilometers, so he did 2 more kilometers than Van Empel. But his pace per kilometer was 4:57, so 4:57 per kilometer, which indicates that on the part that he did without Van Empel, he was much slower. So does this mean that if Van Aert loses the Tour of Flanders, we can blame Van Empel for making Van Aert run too fast at altitude, and that is all the reason that he doesn't win his monument and he is not a real Flandrian?
Yes. Most likely.
Great.
No, and I mean, I think that Sporza will definitely use it. No, Sporza, Atlas News will probably use this then in one of their articles and blame it on Van Aert, that was the reason why he didn't win Tour of Flanders. But no, I mean, we have seen both Van Aert, we have seen him, you know, combine the running with the usual training that he does, and I think that it is a very good combination for sure. And it's great to see that Van Empel is also really within that team, eh? Because for me, at least, it felt that the last couple of years, when it was Jumbo-Visma, it was really there was this separation between the women's and the men's team. And I feel that, especially with this year, they are trying to bridge that gap and be more a unity as a team. And I think that will only do good for we have seen some teams do that. I think with Movistar, for sure, you can see that they try to really have both the women and the men's team, you know, work together in a way. Obviously, you can use each other in certain ways with training and stuff, but not to a certain extent. Obviously, that help goes away. But still, if you can have this kind of team feeling in a way where you're both kind of connected and you attach to each other and feel that, you know, if they have a very good day, then you can kind of celebrate together as well. So I feel that is important, and it seems that they are going in the right direction there at Visma Liesebike.
Yeah, Van Aert training up there together with Van Empel. He's not coming in action until Adrie Harelbeke. Somebody who has been in action this weekend in the Strade Bianche. It's the cyclocross road race, as we like to call it. But really, most cyclocross riders abandoned us and didn't start that race there. But at least Tom Pidcock defended the honor of the cyclocross riders, finishing fourth. Was a pretty boring race. I mean, of course, respect to Pogacar for such a long solo, but it's not really the reason I watch road racing. I found it pretty boring because pretty much as soon as that broadcast started, we already knew who was going to win that and there was no coming back. Just the ease with which he got that 2-minute lead was tremendous. Then Pidcock, he came into the race a bit better in the second half, eventually rode to fourth. I think it's an all right showing by him. Of course, he won last year and would have wanted to do better, but it wasn't horrible either. I think he could have ended on the podium, but he ultimately just missed the move, and that whole dynamic in that chasing group was pretty weird. It seemed to me like everyone was tired, and as a consequence of that, they at some point just everybody was able to get away. Van Giels got away with a big attack, then Skuyens got away, and there really was not much puff in there. So when Pidcock tried to bridge, the gap was already way too big to Skuyens and Van Giels.
With that attack, Pogacar made it almost a junior race. It was mano a mano, no real team tactics, just trying to, from section to section, you try to attack and put the others under pressure. And Van Giels definitely showed that he was the one that tried the longest to bridge that gap to Pogacar, but also he kind of realized that that was not going to happen. And then you fell back, and then you know that you're going to be racing for second. I mean, if you focus on the race of Pidcock, I feel that he is still not yet the form that he would like to be, I would say. And because if you look at his race, he wasn't really showing himself the ultimate watch at the front, and eventually had that moment where he could break away and got himself into fourth. But I feel that a good Pidcock would have been at least second here. And that makes me wonder how, you know, how his season will go from here, because he probably will be focusing also on the on a Liège-Bastogne-Liège, for example, and those are the races that he eyes in a way. But it feels that he's maybe also someone that really has to focus on the summer and is going to try to make the most out of the races that are coming up for him in the Spring Classics, but has his eyes really on the Tour de France and the Olympics. And I hope that it will work out for him. You know, it would be great to see him in the Tour de France and what his potential is going to be there in whatever role he's going to be in. And, you know, same goes for the Olympics. He's going to be a defending Olympic champion there, and that will be interesting as well to see what he can do there.
Yeah, with his peak being a bit later, I think we will definitely see him reach higher form levels. He definitely wasn't at his best, but it also wasn't horrible. So in that regard, I think Pidcock can be happy, and we'll see him really go for it again in the Amstel Gold Race, Flèche Wallonne, and Liège-Bastogne-Liège. So there he will face Mathieu van der Poel. Let's briefly discuss his program and then call it a day for this podcast. As said, he's going to be starting in Milan-San Remo on the 16th of March. Then he is doing the full Cobalt Classic. Well, what should we call it? The four races, Edri Haarlembeke, or Edri Saxo Classic, whichever name it has now. Gent-Wevelgem, and then Ronde van Vlaanderen, Paris-Roubaix. This season he's going to go back to the Amstel Gold Race, and then he is probably also going to start Liège-Bastogne-Liège, although a decision on that still needs to be made. I think it's a well-balanced program, as some don't really think that he will be able to hold his peak all the way from Tour of Flanders till Liège, but what I definitely do think is that Van der Poel will at some point try and win Liège, and after that also try and win Lombardia. I definitely think he will give it a try to win all five monuments. I don't think he will actually do it. I think Lombardia will always be too hard for him. But he loves a challenge, so I can definitely see him try it.
You know, the thing that I have with this program, as you've said, it's going to be very difficult to hold a peak, that entirety of his program that you went through. And I feel the same. And that makes me wonder. You know, he already won Tour Flanders. He won Paris-Roubaix. He has his doubts about Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which is a race that he hasn't won yet. So makes me wonder if the focus is going to be on that race and he just doesn't really want to go over it to that extent and have the pressure already on him for a longer period and just, you know, perform in the races that he's going to do with Tour Flanders and Paris-Roubaix. And then if he feels that the form is good and he is able to continue the season or his program, then to do Liège-Bastogne-Liège, but with the intention to do that already from the start. I feel that if he gets through the first weekend and does Tour Flanders and then with Paris-Roubaix, he will already have an idea of what's going to happen. But it just feels like it was with the idea already from the start that he's going to do Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and maybe already with sort of a training intensity that tried to have him, you know, peak in at Liège. So it wouldn't surprise me if that is going to be the case. And if he's going to race Liège, you never know, but he's going to face some strong opposition most likely there.
I think he is going to race Liège, but I don't think he's peaking for that. I think really his goals are going to be to win either or both of Paris-Roubaix and the Tour of Flanders. Sanremo, of course, he is always there's always the opportunity that he wins there. And just like last year, I mean, last year it was his first race of the season as well. That will be fine. But I don't think Sanremo is the hardest race to win. So there's so many things that can happen there. We could potentially go to a mass sprint. I don't expect it. I think Pogacar is going to attack. And then really what's going to be the question is, can Van der Poel follow? Yes or no? Does he win a sprint? Yes or no? It's going to be interesting. Adrian Gent-Wevelgem, with all the respect, if you win them, nice, but it doesn't make or break your season if you're of the caliber Van Aert Van der Poel. Van Aert won E3 last year, could have won Gent-Wevelgem last year, but gifted it to Laporte. I mean, the fact that he gives that tells you enough. Second of all, we don't talk about that victory in E3. We talk about the fact that he didn't win Flanders and he didn't win Roubaix. I think Van Aert will be fighting against a good Van der Poel in those two races. I think he's going to do Amstel, I think he's going to do Liège, and I think it's going to be similar to what Greg Van Avermaet did in 2017. Van Avermaet in 2017 had a great season, won Omloop, second in Strade, won E3, won Gent-Wevelgem, second in Tour of Flanders, won Paris-Roubaix, and based on that, considering the fact that he could climb, he thought like, I might as well just try Amstel, didn't really go well, I'm not feeling horrible, I might as well try Liège, didn't do horrible there, but didn't do well either. I think that's kind of the mindset we'll see of Van der Poel. It's going to be a bit of an adventure, going to try and see what he can do, how things will go. It is going to be difficult in Liège. I can definitely see his doubts why. I mean, the Rochefoucauld so close towards the end of the course is difficult for a big rider like him, especially if you're up against Evenepoel and Pogacar. Like, those riders are capable of launching the race even earlier on even harder climbs, so it's going to be super, super difficult. But I admire the attempt, but maybe the year that he can actually win it will be a year when the opposition isn't there or when the course changes again, something like that, because it's hard to see it happen, but well, okay, Van der Poel has surprised us before as well. I think that's going to be it then, Issam. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me, and what is going to be the next one then?
I think the next one might be pretty soon, depending on when the cyclocross calendar get released. Some people have indicated the 1st of April, mainly Golazzo that, in an interview with Sporza. But there's also other people that indicate that it could come very soon. So we'll discuss that when it comes out, and else probably will be back after Milan-San Remo, or when there's more news to talk about, Issam.
Most likely, I'm ready, so whenever we have to, we do it.
Will be interesting to follow. I think the next one is going to be about the cyclocross calendar or Strade Bianche. No, we already just covered Strade Bianche. We covered Strade Bianche today. Unfortunately, that's already over. It's going to be Milan-San Remo or the cyclocross calendar. So thanks everyone for listening, and see you guys then. Goodbye.